Brothers and sisters, let's open our Bibles tonight as we go to the Word of God, as we continue to study the book of Ecclesiastes. We are still in chapter 1 of Ecclesiastes, so please open your Bibles there. The last time we were here, brothers and sisters, we tackled head-on the man. And we talked about the author. And we said that the author, who says he's the words of the preacher, the son of David, king in Jerusalem, is or was Solomon. God used Solomon to write his inspired words and give us his wisdom through this earthly king, Solomon. Is traditionally taken as the author of the book of Ecclesiastes. And he refers to himself here as the preacher. Koheleth, we would use the term, a preacher, assembler, or philosopher, or spokesman. But the best translation of all, we said last time, was preacher. So he's the one preaching here. He gathers us and he preaches to us the message. That's point number two. Verse number two. Vanity of vanity, says the preacher, vanity of vanities, all is vanity. That's the core message of the book. That is found all over the book, brothers and sisters, those phrases. And the best way to understand vanity is not just that it's meaningless. Yes, it may mean that. It's not just it means empty or futile or futile. But we said last time on the three angles of this word that vanity carries the idea of that which is brief or temporary. Secondarily, it also carries the idea of something that is hard to grasp or capture, like a vapor. Vapor comes out from your rice cooker when you open it, right? But you can't grasp vapor. You can't catch it. You can smell, ooh, rice is ready, you know, and your viand is ready to go with it. But you can't grasp it, and that is vanity. That's what it is. But thirdly also, vanity refers to realities beyond our understanding. So that's the other angle of the word vanity. So we take all of this and we say, according to the topical lexicon, something that's ultimately worthless when measured against the steadfast purposes of God. So, vanity of vanities, all is vanity, says the man, the preacher. And then he says here as well that the vanity that is mentioned is in an intensified level. Look at the phrase, vanity of vanities. And then he even says, all is vanity. He's taking this to the roof. And then he repeats it. Vanity of vanities, all is vanity. So every part of life, in other words, suffers from its emptiness. So the man, the message, but thirdly, the madness that we discussed last time. Verses 2 and following. And the first madness we discussed last time was the demands for toil is great, but there is no real profit. Verse number 3, what profit has a man from all his labor in which he toils under the sun? Oh, we went straight here, dearly beloved, to say that yes, we toil, and the word that toil is labor. We have trouble, we have mischief, we have sorrow and anguish and wearing effort. But what profit is there for it? What advantage is there for it? What gain is there for it? Is it really worth it that we're doing all of these things? All of this laboring under the sun. Is there really something that will be accomplished at the end of our lives? If we work a little harder, will we get something extra? He asks, what profit does a man from all his labor? The answer, well, even people work really hard, they really gain, or we might say, we really gain nothing much, or even nothing at all, if you look at it from eternity view. work for years in the same company, you retire, and after that, what? The next guy who comes into the line destroys everything that you have done, changes everything. And then after a few years, you're forgotten. Yes, they gave you a little plaque, you know, they gave you a little award, and that one gala evening of a banquet, you're all like looking spiffy. But after that, bye. Nothing really much. One author said people work hard, laboring for some kind of profit, but what do they really get for all their effort? Precious little, if anything at all. That's the first madness. Again, toiling, demanding for toil, that is great, but there's no real profit. But here we go now, and we pick up verses 4 to 7, the second madness. And here's the second madness, my brothers and sisters. The duty for running endlessly is burdensome, but there is no real progress. The duty for running endlessly is burdensome. I mean, look at life, right? We've been running and running and running all our lives. And for you, even for some, oh yes, Pastor, don't get me started. 83 years I've been running my life. Burdensome, but there is no real progress. Look at verses 4 through 7. One generation passes away and another generation comes. But the earth abides forever. The sun also rises and the sun goes down and hastens to the place where it arose. The wind goes toward the south and it turns around to the north. The wind whirls about continually and comes again on its circuit. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place from which the rivers come, there they return. There they return again. And so, Koheleth here explains his point. The second madness. The duty for running endlessly is burdensome, but there is no real progress. And he explains it in two ways. First, examples in creation. He gives us examples that we see in creation. And second here, which we will discuss next Sunday, Lord willing, if he tarries in coming back, we will discuss examples from our own experiences. But tonight, examples from creation, verses 4 to 7. Where can we find in creation that there is a duty for running endlessly and it's burdensome, but there is no real progress? The first example here is the example of generations. Generations. Some of you have seen already many generations in your family because you have been here for like more decades than others. Some of you are still starting, you're still young, you're in like first decade of your life, or second decade, third decade. I realized I was studying this, wow, I'm already past half of my decade, maybe even more. But, you see the generations here. He says in verse 4, one generation passes away, and another generation comes. Right? But the earth abides forever. I remember, always, when my mom and her siblings, that level, after dinner, would stay behind around the table and talk. Oh, before Jen, and we are all there, you know, the cousin level. When we were 7, 6 years old, we don't have these things. Remember that, sister? Oh, yeah, we would walk from here and there. We didn't have Nike shoes. We just had slippers. And you have all these nice things, you know. And we were poor. I remember when the rain will fall and we will know exactly where the holes are when we put the something there to catch the water dripping. And now look at your house now, guys, you know. So the first generation would always desire for the next generation to be better. You should be better than us. We had nothing before. To be greater, to be richer. That's why they send them to school. You send them to the best universities, the best occupation. But you realize this just happens like that in a cycle. They just come and go with no assurance of a more successful generation. Yes, one may be rising, and you can see that in your families. There's new kids now, right? Next generation. But the older generation is dying off. And the cycle goes on, and I can see myself now doing that to my other younger generation, even to my kids. Oh, you're so blessed. When we were in the past, oh no, I said, I can hear my mom in me. I can hear myself talking like what I heard with my aunties and uncles years ago. Am I getting old? Because that's what happens. The former generation is shocked or disappointed of the next generation. Because of course, older generation will say, you have no respect anymore. Right, kids, do you hear that sometimes, or teenagers? Oh, if you did that 20 years ago, you will have this, right? And the older generation talk about that today. Oh, this next generation, if they just experience what we experienced in the past, right? That means you're getting old. If you're starting to talk like that. Because there is a next generation. Lack of respect, lack of ethics, lack of drive, lack of values, etc. We are not the only ones who observe that. Because even Socrates said this, the children now love luxury. Wow, this sounds like this generation, but he wrote this hundreds of years ago. He said, the children now love luxury. They have bad manners, contempt for authority. They show disrespect to their elders. Wow, Socrates, writing hundreds of years ago, and yet it's still very relevant today. Peter the Hermit, what did he say? The young people of today think nothing but themselves. Wait, did he write this yesterday? No, he wrote this hundreds of years ago. They have no reverence for parents or old age. They are impatient of all restraint. They talk as if they alone knew everything. Oh yes, definitely. Yeah. But this is the burden. One generation passes away and another generation comes. That's why when I study this, I begin to fully understand why when I said to my family that I'm no longer going to pursue medicine, a few got really angry at me. Why? Because I came from a poor family. And I was blessed to have an aunt who was a nurse, went to the U.S., and she's still there until now. She retired, I think, 2 years ago. But she worked tirelessly there for years, sending money back to the Philippines every month. That has been her role. So that she's thinking the next generation will have a better life. Not the kind of life we had. But somebody needs to take up the mantle. You see? She can't work forever. And I believe in our family, that was supposed to be me. Because I was the one, young enough, I want to be a doctor. And in the Philippines, if you're a doctor, usually you're rich. Usually you have cars, you have a better house. You can do vacations. You can send people to school. You know? Usually, that's the case. And so when I said I want to be a doctor when I was young, she was so happy. I'll take care of you, Jan. We'll send you, don't worry about all your tuition and all that you need, your books, because it's expensive to go to medical school. It is. Poor people don't usually go because of that. There are scholarships, yes, but it's so hard to get onto the scholarships. You need to be the smartest of the smart. I knew I wasn't that smart, but I said, I was driven. So everybody was excited. My aunt has some form of hope that someday Jan will be the next. And the next generation will be attached to him and he will do his part. I understand why when I said to my family, the Lord calls me in the ministry. I need to follow the Lord. Sorry, I can't pursue medicine anymore. There were disappointments. Discouragements. Some were angry at me. Some even discouraged me. You know, you can serve the Lord. Even if you're a doctor, you don't need to be a pastor. You can be a You can go for missions trip, you know, and you can go for medical missions. You can use your hospital or whatever if you, because that was my dream to have a hospital of my own. But I said, no, that's not the leading of the Lord. I understand. Because that was the thinking. Next generation will be better. Who will stand in the gap for the next generation? I'm sure parents tonight, you're saying that. I want my kids to get a better life, to have a good life. So when I am not here anymore, they can have it and they can pass it on to the next. But really, it's just a cycle. A vicious cycle that it just goes around like that. One generation passes away and another generation comes. So, the duty for running endlessly is there. And it's burdensome. Does it always work the way we plan it to be? And the reality is there really is no real progress. For some families, they have tried to make their lives better. But really, the next generation can just waste their lives. And I've seen families that maybe they were wealthy in the past, but now they're poor. They're not as wealthy anymore because the children just didn't care. So one generation passes away and another generation comes, but there's no real expected progress. But here's what the Koheleth says, the earth abides forever. As people come and go, the world stays the same. In other words, the life here on earth is just really repetitive. Repetitive. Generation, they die, new generation, and that's it. We're running after that over and over again. The second example is not only generations, the generations, but verse 5, the sun. The sun. Look at verse 5. The sun also rises, and the sun goes down and hastens, or is eager for, it's panting, it's running after to the place where it arose. In other words, this ball of fire we call the sun rises and sets without going anywhere. Have you noticed that? It just goes like that forever and over and over and over again. Some of us can feel it, right? Wow, what time is it now? 5. Oh, the day is over. Okay, throw the towel, end with work, go eat dinner, sleep, then wake up. Oh, okay. Oh, let's go again to the same cycle. Work. And then, have you noticed that the sun is just going? And you can even go through life without looking at the sun, but the sun just continues its course. Around and around it goes without ever actually ending up anywhere. Now, of course, we know that the sun is not going around the earth. That is not scientific. But Koheleth here is looking the perspective from the earth, observing the sun. Okay? We know, of course, scientifically that it's not like that. This is more poetic than scientific. So this ball of fire goes around and around. It goes without ever actually ending up anywhere. It is repetitive, but not really progressive. Not really progressive. The word there we find hastens, carries the idea of panting or gasping. The term depicts intense inhalation. That kind of thing that I experienced this afternoon going up to the driveway of Glenn and Helen carrying Theo. And when I reached the top, like, okay. Panting, gasping, right? Or even snorting. And by extension, any vigorous pursuit, whether driven by appetite, desire, or hostility. The same verb can describe the wheezing of an exhausted animal, the eager breath of one who craves, and the trampling fury of an oppressor. Furthermore, the lexicon says the verb pictures the ceaseless circuit of the sun that hurries back to its rising point, underscoring the world's weary repetition. People ask, how's your week? The same. I don't even know what happened. Wait a minute, let me think about it. Have you heard of that, of those responses? Or maybe you have used those responses this week. When somebody asks you, how's your week? The idea here is very evident in the answer. So-so, it's a week, you know, nothing spectacular, not bad. I can't even remember what happened, right? It's so monotonous and static. Again, the running after things is so burdensome, but there's no real progress. Like the sun, you're just stuck there, going around and around and around, that now you look back, there's really no heights. Just like that of a life. Schedule, just mundane and monotonous, repetitive, but you're going nowhere. Not only the sun, but in verse 6, another example from creation is the wind. The wind goes toward the south and turns around to the north, and the wind whirls about continually and comes again on its circuit. The above-mentioned principle is applied to the wind. It continuously, monotonously repeats its circle from the north to the south. Now, the wind seems to just freely go its way, right? But you know, remember Jesus in John 3:8. I'm going to point this out because Jesus used this concept as well, but applying it to the Spirit. John 3:8 says, "The wind blows where it wishes, and you hear the sound of it, but cannot tell where it comes from and where it goes. So is everyone who is born of the Spirit." God, or Jesus Christ, uses this picture to point to the work of the Spirit, especially in the aspect of salvation. Seems like it's going freely everywhere, but no, there's a direction in it. And the wind certainly has direction. It's not just going everywhere. There is some direction, and science have discovered that. There are some wind patterns all over the globe, so that even shipments or shipping industries utilize this wind circuits for their advantage. Even putting where to put like those big electric fans. No, not electric fans, sorry. What are those things? Wind vanes. Am I correct? Those that can generate power. Windmills, there you go. Turbines, yes. Thank you, birthday girl. Okay, so those are some of the things that we can benefit from because we know wind does have circuit. But here's the point. Around and around the wind goes, but never really reaching a destination. Never really reaching. There is no true progress. So the wind is another example of this. Another example in verse 7 are the rivers. All the rivers run into the sea, yet the sea is not full. To the place from which the rivers come, there they return again. Now others, I've known for a fact that even in the seminary training that I've had, have used this verse to point out, see, the Bible uses science in not so scientific terms. They say this referred to the hydrologic cycle or the water cycle wherein, yes, the water evaporates and then it stays there as vapor, then it condenses, becomes rain or hail or whatnot, right? And it goes back to the sea. And then just it goes like that in a cycle. But I don't think that is the point here that Koheleth makes. Koheleth here may have a specific example in mind. And so I read some more of this. And what probably Koheleth was talking about is the Jordan River and the Dead Sea. When he was talking about the river here and the sea. You see, for many hundreds of years, the Jordan River flows into the Dead Sea. But this landlocked body of water is never full. Dead Sea is never full. It's been hundreds of years. Jordan River supplying that lake for years and years and years. But Koheleth, having lived there in the area, have observed the Dead Sea is never full. What's happening? All of the supplies of water, even from the Mount Hermon there, the source of Jordan River, just flows down. But it doesn't become full. It's like life. You pour into your life, into your children, into your marriage, everything you've got. You work. You make investments. You put in investments into relationships. You put in time. You put in effort. You put in all that you can for your health. Into your cooking, into your cleaning, all of these things. We're on this rut. Just like the river pouring into the Dead Sea. But really, where is the progress? Where is the prophet? We're even shocked. This guy, he's so healthy. He runs every day. He put investments on his health. He eats healthy. But he's sick. Right? We're buckled by... What happened? This guy, he invested so wisely on his money, on his portfolio. He knows exactly where to put his money. But he's bankrupt. What happened? You put so much into your education, but now you haven't even used it. What happened? Into your marriage, into your children's life, but you see your children growing up and not even caring about you have cared about. What happened? It's just like that river flowing down into the Dead Sea, but the Dead Sea is not full. There is no real progress. There is no real profit. We're going nowhere. So what's the summary here? In verse 8, we see this summary. After talking about generations and the sun and the wind and the river, all things, Koheleth said, are full of labor. Man cannot express it. The eye is not satisfied with seeing, nor the ear filled with hearing. Oh, I like how the New Living Testament or the New Living Translation says it. It says, everything is wearisome beyond description. Do you feel it sometimes? No matter how much we see, we are never satisfied. No matter how much we hear, we are not content. Another translation says, everything continues in the same way. There is nothing important to talk about. Nothing that we see is enough to make us happy. There are always more things that we want to hear. More things we want to see. Talking about seeing. Oh, we're never satisfied. We're YouTube doom scrolling. Can you see yourself there for hours? If you don't stop, you really cannot stop. You just scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll and scroll. The more scrolling you find, the more the logarithm just continues to give you more. And in movies, there's so much more to see. And in your Netflix and your Comcast and your Facebook reels. Seeing. In hearing, oh wow, endless iTunes, podcasts, music, conspiracy theorists, if you want. Political analysts to analyze the political perspective you're looking at. Oh, it's endless. Endless. Influencers, oh, you're into health? Oh yeah, you have thousands there. You can spend the entire week just scrolling and listening to them about beauty, about life. Brothers and sisters, there is always something else. Something more. We are never satisfied. Those are the illustrations of vanity. That's life. That's what Koheleth says. As we end tonight, don't forget what the Koheleth's father said in Psalm 23. The Lord is my shepherd. I shall not want. Oh wow, what a blessing of the tandem of a father and son tonight, dearly beloved. Koheleth, the preacher, Solomon says, never satisfied. But his father, of course, gives us where true satisfaction comes from. The shepherd. Jesus Christ is the great shepherd. He's the good shepherd. And he is the only one who can satisfy us. And whatever he ordains in our lives is right, is holy, and just. So that if we put our lives in his hands, we know that even though life seems like the generations, seems like the sun, seems like the wind, seems like the river of water that goes nowhere. But if our lives are in his hands, in the shepherd's hands, we know that at the end of the day, if we have followed him, if we have glorified him, if we have served him with the right heart, there are rewards waiting for the faithful sheep. There is true satisfaction in the Lord Jesus Christ. Think about that, dearly beloved. Is your life like this? That's what Koheleth has said. Generations, the sun, the river, the wind. Do you find yourself sometimes asking, where am I heading? So burdensome. What is the progress? Well, you know, if God is not in it, it's going nowhere. But if God is in it, your life is in God's hands, you know where you're heading. To that place where there is true satisfaction and joy.